With Dhammika, Part 2, translated by Bhikkhu Sajjato. With Kama. At one time, the Buddha was staying near Sarvati in Jeta's Grove, an Atapindika's monastery. Now at that time, Venerable Kama and Venerable Sumana were staying near Sarvati in the dark forest. Then they went up to the Buddha, bowed and sat down to one side. Venerable Kama said to the Buddha, "Sir, a mendicant who is perfected, with defilements ended, who has completed the spiritual journey, done what had to be done, laid down the burden, achieved their own true goal, utterly ended the fetters of rebirth, and is rightly freed through enlightenment, does not think, there is someone better than me, or equal to me, or worse than me." That is what Kama said, and the teacher approved. Then Kama, knowing that the teacher approved, got up from his seat, bowed and respectfully circled the Buddha, keeping him on his right before leaving. And then, not long after Kama had left, Sumana said to the Buddha, "Sir, a mendicant who is perfected, with defilements ended, who has completed the spiritual journey, done what had to be done, laid down the burden, achieved their own true goal, utterly ended the fetters of rebirth, and is rightly freed through enlightenment, does not think, there is no one better than me, or equal to me, or worse than me." That is what Sumana said, and the teacher approved. Then Sumana, knowing that the teacher approved, got up from his seat, bowed and respectfully circled the Buddha, keeping him on his right before leaving. And then, soon after Kama and Sumana had left, the Buddha addressed the mendicants. "Mendicants, this is how gentlemen declare enlightenment. The goal is spoken of, but the self is not involved. But it seems that there are some foolish people here who declare enlightenment as a joke. Later they will fall into anguish. They don't rank themselves as being among superiors, inferiors, or equals. Rebirth is ended. The spiritual journey has been completed. They live freed from fetters." Sense restraint. Mendicants, when there is no sense restraint, one who lacks sense restraint has destroyed a vital condition for ethical conduct. When there is no ethical conduct, one who lacks ethics has destroyed a vital condition for right immersion. When there is no right immersion, one who lacks right immersion has destroyed a vital condition for true knowledge and vision. When there is no true knowledge and vision, one who lacks true knowledge and vision has destroyed a vital condition for disillusionment and dispassion. When there is no disillusionment and dispassion, one who lacks disillusionment and dispassion has destroyed a vital condition for knowledge and vision of freedom. Suppose there was a tree that lacked branches and foliage. Its shoots, bark, softwood and heartwood would not grow to fullness. In the same way, when there is no sense restraint, one who lacks sense restraint has destroyed a vital condition for ethical conduct. When there is no ethical conduct, one who lacks ethics has destroyed a vital condition for right immersion. When there is no right immersion, one who lacks right immersion has destroyed a vital condition for true knowledge and vision. When there is no true knowledge and vision, one who lacks true knowledge and vision has destroyed a vital condition for disillusionment and dispassion. When there is no disillusionment and dispassion, one who lacks disillusionment and dispassion has destroyed a vital condition for knowledge and vision of freedom. When there is sense restraint, one who has sense restraint has fulfilled a vital condition for ethical conduct. When there is ethical conduct, one who has fulfilled ethical conduct has fulfilled a vital condition for right immersion. When there is right immersion, one who has fulfilled right immersion has fulfilled a vital condition for true knowledge and vision. When there is true knowledge and vision, one who has fulfilled true knowledge and vision has fulfilled a vital condition for disillusionment and dispassion. When there is disillusionment and dispassion, one who has fulfilled disillusionment and dispassion has fulfilled a vital condition for knowledge and vision of freedom. Suppose there was a tree that was complete with branches and foliage. Its shoots, bark, softwood and heartwood would all grow to fullness. In the same way, when there is sense restraint, one who has fulfilled sense restraint has fulfilled a vital condition for ethical conduct. When there is ethical conduct, one who has fulfilled ethical conduct has fulfilled a vital condition for right immersion. When there is right immersion, one who has fulfilled right immersion has fulfilled a vital condition for true knowledge and vision. When there is true knowledge and vision, one who has fulfilled true knowledge and vision has fulfilled a vital condition for disillusionment and dispassion. When there is disillusionment and dispassion, one who has fulfilled disillusionment and dispassion has fulfilled a vital condition for knowledge and vision of freedom. With Ananda. Then Venerable Ananda went up to Venerable Sariputta and exchanged greetings with him. When the greetings and polite conversation were over, Ananda sat down to one side and said to Sariputta, "Reverend Sariputta, how does a mendicant get to hear a teaching they haven't heard before? How do they remember those teachings they have heard? How do they keep rehearsing the teachings they've already got to know? And how do they come to understand what they haven't understood before?" "Well, Venerable Ananda, you're very learned. Why don't you clarify this yourself?" "Well then, Reverend Sariputta, listen and apply your mind well. I will speak." "Yes, Reverend," Sariputta replied. Ananda said this, "Reverend Sariputta, take a mendicant who memorizes the teaching, statements, songs, discussions, verses, inspired exclamations, legends, stories of past lives, amazing stories, and classifications. Then, just as they learned and memorized it, they teach others in detail, make them recite in detail, practice reciting in detail, and think about and consider the teaching in their heart, examining it with the mind. They enter the Rains Retreat in a monastery with senior mendicants who are very learned, inheritors of the heritage, who have memorized the teachings, the monastic law, and the outlines. From time to time they go up to those mendicants and ask them questions. 'Why, sir, does it say this? What does that mean?' Those venerables clarify what is unclear, reveal what is obscure, and dispel doubt regarding the many doubtful matters. This is how a mendicant gets to hear a teaching they haven't heard before. It's how they remember those teachings they have heard. It's how they keep rehearsing the teachings they've already got to know. And it's how they come to understand what they haven't understood before." "It's incredible, Reverend. It's amazing. How well said this was by Venerable Ananda. And we will remember Venerable Ananda as someone who has these six qualities. For Ananda memorizes the teaching, statements, songs, discussions, verses, inspired exclamations, legends, stories of past lives, amazing stories, and classifications. Those venerables clarify to Ananda what is unclear, reveal what is obscure, and dispel doubt regarding the many doubtful matters." Aristocrats. And then the Brahmin Janasoni went up to the Buddha and exchanged greetings with him. When the greetings and polite conversation were over, he sat down to one side and said to the Buddha, "Aristocrats, Master Gotama, have what as their ambition? What is their preoccupation? What are they dedicated to? What do they insist on? What is their ultimate goal?" "Aristocrats, Brahmin, have wealth as their ambition. They're preoccupied with wisdom. They're dedicated to power. They insist on territory. Their ultimate goal is authority." "Brahmins, Master Gotama, have what as their ambition? What is their preoccupation? What are they dedicated to? What do they insist on? What is their ultimate goal?" "Brahmins have wealth as their ambition. They're preoccupied with wisdom. They're dedicated to the hymns. They insist on sacrifice. Their ultimate goal is the Brahma realm. Householders, Master Gotama, have what as their ambition? What is their preoccupation? What are they dedicated to? What do they insist on? What is their ultimate goal? Householders have wealth as their ambition. They're preoccupied with wisdom. They're dedicated to their profession. They insist on work. Their ultimate goal is to complete their work. Women, Master Gotama, have what as their ambition? What is their preoccupation? What are they dedicated to? What do they insist on? What is their ultimate goal? Women have a man as their ambition. They're preoccupied with adornments. They're dedicated to their children. They insist on being without a co-wife. Their ultimate goal is authority. Bandits, Master Gotama, have what as their ambition? What is their preoccupation? What are they dedicated to? What do they insist on? What is their ultimate goal? Bandits have theft as their ambition. They're preoccupied with a hiding place. They're dedicated to their sword. They insist on darkness. Their ultimate goal is invisibility. Ascetics, Master Gotama, have what as their ambition? What is their preoccupation? What are they dedicated to? What do they insist on? What is their ultimate goal? Ascetics have patience and gentleness as their ambition. They're preoccupied with wisdom. They're dedicated to ethical conduct. They insist on owning nothing. Their ultimate goal is extinguishment. It's incredible, Master Gotama. It's amazing. Master Gotama knows the ambition, preoccupation, dedication, insistence, and ultimate goal of aristocrats, Brahmins, householders, women, bandits, and ascetics. Excellent, Master Gotama, excellent. From this day forth, may Master Gotama remember me as a lay follower who has gone for refuge for life. Diligence. Then a certain Brahmin went up to the Buddha and exchanged greetings with him. When the greetings and polite conversation were over, he sat down to one side and said to the Buddha, Master Gotama, is there one thing that, when developed and cultivated, secures benefits for both the present life and lives to come? There is, Brahmin. So, what is it? Diligence, Brahmin, is one thing that, when developed and cultivated, secures benefits for both the present life and lives to come. The footprints of all creatures that walk can fit inside an elephant's footprint. So an elephant's footprint is said to be the biggest of them all. In the same way, diligence is one thing that, when developed and cultivated, secures benefits for both the present life and lives to come. The rafters of a bungalow all lean to the peak, slope to the peak, and meet at the peak. So the peak is said to be the topmost of them all. In the same way, diligence is one thing, when developed and cultivated, secures benefits for both the present life and lives to come. A reed cutter, having cut the reeds, grabs them at the top and shakes them down, shakes them about, and shakes them off. In the same way, diligence is one thing, when developed and cultivated, secures benefits for both the present life and lives to come. When the stalk of a bunch of mangoes is cut, all the mangoes attached to the stalk will follow along. In the same way, diligence is one thing, when developed and cultivated, secures benefits for both the present life and lives to come. All lesser rulers are vassals of a wheel-turning monarch, so the wheel-turning monarch is said to be the foremost of them all. In the same way, diligence is one thing, when developed and cultivated, secures benefits for both the present life and lives to come. The radiance of all the stars is not worth a 16th part of the moon's radiance, so the moon's radiance is said to be the best of them all. In the same way, diligence is one thing that, when developed and cultivated, secures benefits for both the present life and lives to come. This is the one thing that, when developed and cultivated, secures benefits for both the present life and lives to come. Excellent, Master Gotama, excellent. From this day forth, may Master Gotama remember me as a lay follower who has gone for refuge for life. About Dhammika. At one time the Buddha was staying near Rajagaha on the Vulture's Peak Mountain. Now at that time, Venerable Dhammika was a resident in all seven monasteries of his native land. There he abused visiting mendicants. He insulted, harmed, attacked and harassed them. The visiting mendicants who were treated in this way did not stay. They left, abandoning the monastery. Then the local lay followers thought to themselves, "We have supplied the mendicant Sangha with robes, alms food, lodgings, and medicines and supplies for the sick. But the visiting mendicants don't stay. They leave, abandoning the monastery. What is the cause? What is the reason for this?" Then the local lay followers thought to themselves, "This venerable Dhammika abuses visiting mendicants. He insults, harms, attacks and harasses them. The visiting mendicants who are treated in this way do not stay. They leave, abandoning the monastery. Why don't we banish Venerable Dhammika?" Then the local lay followers went up to Venerable Dhammika and said to him, "Sir, please leave this monastery. You've stayed here long enough." Then Venerable Dhammika left and went to another monastery. There he abused visiting mendicants. He insulted, harmed, attacked and harassed them. The visiting mendicants who were treated in this way did not stay. They left, abandoning the monastery. Then the local lay followers thought to themselves, "This venerable Dhammika abuses visiting mendicants. He insults, harms, attacks and harasses them. The visiting mendicants who were treated in this way do not stay. They leave, abandoning the monastery. Why don't we banish Venerable Dhammika?" They said to Venerable Dhammika, "Sir, please leave this monastery. You've stayed here long enough." Then Venerable Dhammika left and went to another monastery. There he abused visiting mendicants. He insulted, harmed, attacked and harassed them. The visiting mendicants who were treated in this way did not stay. They left, abandoning the monastery. Then the local lay followers thought to themselves, "Why don't we banish Venerable Dhammika from all seven monasteries in our native land?" Then the local lay followers went up to Venerable Dhammika and said to him, "Sir, please leave all seven monasteries in our native land." Then Venerable Dhammika thought, "I've been banished by the local lay followers from all seven monasteries in my native land. Where am I to go now?" He thought, "Why don't I go to see the Buddha?" Then Venerable Dhammika took his bowl and robe and set out for Rajagaha. Eventually he came to Rajagaha and the Vulture's Peak. He went up to the Buddha, bowed, and sat down to one side. The Buddha said to him, "So, Brahmin Dhammika, where have you come from?" "Sir, I've been banished by the local lay followers from all seven monasteries in my native land." "Enough, Brahmin Dhammika, what's that to you? Now that you've been banished from all of those places, you have come to me. Once upon a time, some sea merchants set sail for the ocean deeps, taking with them a land-spotting bird. When their ship was out of sight of land, they released the bird. It flew right away to the east, the west, the north, the south, upwards and in between. If it saw land on any side, it went there and stayed. But if it saw no land on any side, it returned to the ship. In the same way, now that you've been banished from all of those places, you have come to me. Once upon a time, King Kauravya had a royal banyan tree with five trunks called Well Planted. It was shady and lovely. Its canopy spread over 12 leagues, while the network of roots spread for 5 leagues. Its fruit were as large as a rice pot, and they were as sweet as pure wild honey. The king and harem made use of one trunk, the troops another, the people of town and country another, ascetics and Brahmins another, and beasts and birds another. No one guarded the fruit, yet no one damaged another's fruits. Then a certain person ate as much as he liked of the fruit, then broke off a branch and left. Then the deity haunting the royal banyan tree thought, "Oh, how incredible, how amazing, how wicked this person is to eat as much as they like, then break off a branch and leave. Why don't I make sure that the royal banyan tree gives no fruit in future?" Then the royal banyan tree gave no more fruit. Then King Karavya went up to Sakka, Lord of Gods, and said to him, "Please, sir, you should know that the royal banyan tree called Well Planted gives no fruit." Then Sakka used his psychic powers to will that a violent storm come, and it felled and uprooted the royal banyan tree. Then the deity haunting the tree stood to one side, miserable and sad, weeping with a tearful face. Then Sakka went up to that deity and said, "Why, God, are you standing to one side, miserable and sad, weeping with a tearful face?" "Because, my good sir, a violent storm came and felled and uprooted my home." "Well, did you stand by your tree's duty when the storm came?" "But, my good sir, how does a tree stand by its duty?" "It's when those who need the tree's roots, bark, leaves, flowers, or fruit take what they need. Yet the deity is not displeased or upset because of this. This is how a tree stands by its duty." "I was not standing by a tree's duty when the storm came and felled and uprooted my home." "God, if you were to stand by a tree's duty, your home may be as it was before." "I will stand by a tree's duty. May my home be as it was before." Then Sakka used his psychic power to will that a violent storm come, and it raised up that mighty banyan tree, and the bark of the roots was healed. In the same way, Brahmin Dhammika, were you standing by an ascetic's duty when the local lay followers banished you from all seven of the monasteries in your native land? "But, sir, how do I stand by an ascetic's duty?" "When someone abuses, annoys, or argues with an ascetic, the ascetic doesn't abuse, annoy, or argue back at them. That's how an ascetic stands by an ascetic's duty." "I was not standing by an ascetic's duty when the local lay followers banished me from all seven of the monasteries in my native land." "Once upon a time there was a teacher called Sunetta. He was a religious founder and was free of sensual desire. He had many hundreds of disciples. He taught them the path to rebirth in the company of Brahma. Those lacking confidence in Sunetta were, when their body broke up after death, reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. Those full of confidence in Sunetta were, when their body broke up after death, reborn in a good place, a heavenly realm. Once upon a time there was a teacher called Mugupakka, Aranemi, Kudalaka, Hatipala, Jyotipala. He was a religious founder and was free of sensual desire. He had many hundreds of disciples. He taught them the way to rebirth in the company of Brahma. Those lacking confidence in Jyotipala were, when their body broke up after death, reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. Those full of confidence in Jyotipala were, when their body broke up after death, reborn in a good place, a heavenly realm. What do you think, Brahmin Dhammika? If someone with malicious intent were to abuse and insult these six teachers with their hundreds of followers, would they not make much bad karma?"
"Yes, sir."
"They would indeed. But someone who abuses and insults a single person, accomplished in view, with malicious intent makes even more bad karma. Why is that?"
"Brahmin Dhammika, I say that any injury done by those outside of the Buddhist community does not compare with what is done to one's own spiritual companions. So you should train like this. We will have no malicious intent for those who we want to have as our spiritual companions." "That's how you should train. Sunetta and Mugupakka and Aranemi the Brahmin, Hatipala the student, and Kudalaka were teachers, and Jyotipala Govinda was priest for seven kings. these six famous teachers, harmless ones of the past, were free of putrefaction, compassionate, gone beyond the fetter of sensuality. Detached from sensual desire, they were reborn in the Brahma realm. Many hundreds of their disciples were also free of putrefaction, stench, compassionate, gone beyond the fetter of sensuality. Detached from sensual desire, they were reborn in the Brahma realm. One who insults with malicious intent these non-Buddhist seers, free of desire, immersed in samadhi, such a man makes much bad karma. But one who insults with malicious intent a single person accomplished in view, a mendicant disciple of the Buddha, that man makes even more bad karma. You shouldn't attack a holy person who has given up the grounds for views. This person is called the seventh of the noble Sangha. They're not free of desire for sensual pleasures, and their faculties are still immature. Faith, mindfulness, and energy, serenity and discernment. If you attack such a mendicant, you first hurt yourself. Having hurt yourself, you harm the other. But if you protect yourself, the other is also protected. So you should protect yourself. An astute person is always uninjured.